Okay, first of all, thank you very much for those of you who wish me a mazel tov on my way in. Last week I thought I would never be a grandfather. And this week, Baruch Hashem, HaKadosh Baruch Hu has blessed us with a healthy baby grandson. Parshas Mishpatim deals with many of the halachos that we find in the Torah. Much of Shas can be found from the Psukim in this week's Parsha. And in a general sense, there seems to be, understandably so, a disconnect between halacha and what we'll call, for lack of a better term, and I really don't mean it this way, but the word spirituality. There seems to be two different worlds. There's the world of the things that I do, and then there's this like hashkafa of Yiddishkeit. And for many of us, there's a feeling of disconnect. Perhaps when it comes to davening, a person could close their eyes and shuckle very hard. And maybe there could be a feeling of spirituality. But when it comes to halacha, you know, the various halachas that we'll see today, there seems to be a disconnect. Like those are like more like things that a civil society perhaps needs. But they're not necessarily spiritual. And in Yiddishkeit, that's untenable. Because when we say that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is one, it means that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is one with his thoughts. And that means that it's not like the way that you and I think. Like, we are not our thoughts. We are people who have thoughts. But our thoughts do not define us. However, not so when it comes to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is one, and therefore he is one with his thoughts. You cannot separate HaKadosh Baruch Hu from his will and his wisdom. And therefore, it's impossible to conceive of the Torah as anything but an expression of our relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And today, based on a sicha from the Lubavitcher Rebbe, I would like to share with you a very, very detailed and specific approach to how to see the laws specifically of Nezikin, the laws of damages, and as we'll see, perhaps even a little bit more than that, how these things dictate not only human history and the evolution of human history, but even our relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And I just want to highlight for a moment that this is very important. And it's going to be, as I mentioned to you, I think I've only done this once before, and I think it's the second time in Torah Devorah that I've ever done this, of writing this out on the board the way we have it, and we'll go through each step. But it's not a hard concept, but it's not an easy concept. Because what we're going to try to show, and again, I just want to try to be mezarez, try to inspire those who are here but not here. And Baruch Hashem, I see that most of you are here, but there are those of you that are here but not here. That this is not the type of shiur that you can dip in and dip out. It's not the type of shiur that you hear a line and then it's like you got the line. There's a theme that's going to flow through this entire thing. And that theme is not difficult to understand, but you have to understand every single step, which is why I wrote it out. Nezikin in Shas and Gemara is made up of three mesechtas that you may have heard of before. They're called the three gates: Baba Kama, Baba Metzia, and Baba Basra. Baba Kama is the first gate, Baba Metzia is the second gate or the middle gate, and Baba Basra is the third gate, the final gate. And each one of them, as we'll see, has different themes, has different first lines of the Masechta that introduce the Masechta, and everything that's in the introduction contains the entirety of the Masechta. There are different, as we'll see, historical developments. The history of all of human society is based on these three Masechtas. And ultimately, there's what we see as Bein Adam Lamakom, how these things and the knowledge of these things is seen in our relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. I'm going to go through each one, and I'm just going to go through first the theme of each one and the first line, and then we'll get to ultimately how this develops in history and the Bein Adam Lamakom. So the first gate is called Baba Kama. The theme of Baba Kama is criminal or violent attacks on a person's property or on a person themselves. And this obviously represents a certain, what we'll call, barbaric state of disharmony. When you have somebody who's acting in a violent way towards another person's property, that's a violent state. The first line of the Masechta deals with the four primary damagers that we see in the Torah, which are namely Shor, Bor, Mava, and Esh. Shor, Bor, Mava, and Esh. Shor is literally means ox. In this case, it would be a person's ox goring his neighbor's ox. For those of you who have brothers, perhaps you heard your brothers talking about if one shor gores or stoises in Yiddish another person's ox. So this is talking about damage that's inflicted by a person's property. If my property damages your property. The second case is called bor. Bor means damagers that are placed in a public domain. So for example, if I dig a hole in the middle of the street and you fall into that hole, who's responsible? I'm responsible. Why? Because I created a damager in the middle of the street. Then there's something called mave. Mave means damages inflicted by a person themselves. And finally, there's esh. Esh means, let's say I started a fire on my own property and it spread to my neighbor's property. And since I failed to prevent this esh from impacting on somebody else, I'm responsible. So those are the four categories. I'll repeat them very quickly. These are the four categories that are spoken about in the beginning of Baba Kama. And as we'll see, they are mission critical to understanding the first gate of human history and our relationship with Hashem. Again, just to repeat, Shor is when my property damages another person's property. Bor is when my damager was put in a public domain. Mave is when I myself damaged somebody else. And Esh is I started a fire on my property and that fire spread to somebody else's property. And the reason that I'm liable for that is because I failed to prevent the damager from creating a potentially dangerous situation. Other topics in the Masechta include Gneva and Gzela. That is Baba Kama. That is the first line of Baba Kama and the theme of the Masechta. Moving on to Baba Metzia. Baba Metzia is the second gate. Second gate, the theme is different than in Baba Kama. In Baba Kama, we were talking about violent and or criminal acts. And in Baba Metzia, it's not that way. There's no overtly criminal acts, but what we have is day-to-day disagreements. Day-to-day disagreements, each party thinks they're in the right, each party has a claim, and they both have a certain way of seeing this reality. The first line in the Masechta, again, a very famous line for boys learning in yeshiva, almost every boy will know this line, it's called Shnayim Ochsim Betalis. If two people are holding onto a talis, one says it's my talis, the other person says it's my talis, the question is, what do you do? The topics in this Masechta are return of lost objects, certain disputes that come about because of loans or sales or various levels of employment. And what's going to be very important for our purposes is called the Arba Shomrim, the four different types of people that watch people's objects. Those four Shomrim, the Arba Shomrim are, I'm saying them out now, they're not on the board, what's called a Shomer Sachar. A Shomer Sachar is somebody who is paid to watch an object. A Shomer Chinam, somebody who is not paid, but they are responsible for watching your object. A Shoel is a borrower, I'll repeat it in a moment. And a Sachar, who is a renter. Again, four types of Shomrim. If I give my object to you, there are four ways of, so to speak, taking ownership for it. Shomer Sachar is I am paid to watch your object. Shomer Chinam is I am unpaid, but I have taken responsibility for watching your object. A Sachar is someone who rents your object, and a Shoel is someone who borrows your object. All four of those cases. A Sachar is somebody who rents the object. A Shoel is somebody who borrows the object. Those are the four ways that a person can take responsibility for your object. Moving on to Baba Basra, you'll see girls everywhere. I know these details might be tedious at first, but they're going to be necessary to understanding the punchline of the shir. Moving on, we have Baba Basra. Baba Basra is very different than Baba Kama and Baba Metzia. In Baba Kama, we dealt with criminal acts, violent acts. In Baba Metzia, we dealt with day-to-day disagreements. And in Baba Basra, we're dealing with the ideal. Laws that are not designed to settle arguments, but to create a harmonious existence between a man and his fellow man. So, for example, the first line that we see in Baba Basra is where you have people who are partners in a courtyard, and they want to divide the courtyard by building a wall in the middle. And the Gemara says that in everything they do, they should follow the local customs, and if they build with uncut stones, then they should give a space of each one should give a space of 3 hand breadths, and if they build with bricks, then each one should give a space of 1.5 hand breadths, and therefore the wall belongs equally to both of them. The idea here, just to be very clear about this, is as follows. We're not coming to punish criminals. We're not coming to settle disputes. We're coming to teach a person how to live in harmony with their fellow. So now, just to review very quickly, just to make sure everyone has the details, and then we can get into the Pnimius HaTorah. We have here in the Nezikin 3 separate movements. Movement number 1 is the movement of criminal. Somebody attacks somebody else. In that case, we're told what to do. Depends on the type of damager. 4 damagers. We have Baba Metzia. It's not criminal, but there is an argument. We need to know how to settle the argument. There we spoke at length about the Arba Shomrim. Depends on who the person watching the object is. What is their title? And finally, not only is it not criminal, and not only is there no dispute, but in Baba Basra we're speaking about, in the ideal, how do we live in a harmonious existence? How do we build boundaries where each one of us has a chelek, has a share in those boundaries? And now let's move on to the Pnimius HaTorah to see how all of these things are baked in to the history of society, and how each one of these things ultimately becomes about our relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. You know, one of the things that we don't think about, because Baruch Hashem, we're living for the most part in a civilized society, is we don't realize that for much of human history, society was barbaric. You come, and you should be very proud to know this, you come from a long line of people, a nation whose design it was to bring godliness to a barbaric world. We don't really think about that in terms of having Jewish pride. Many of us, we think to ourselves, what is Judaism contributing to society today? And we look around and we see, for the most part, society is civilized. But if you learn your history, if you read, for example, about Genghis Khan, if you learn about what barbaric people did back in the day, if you learn about human sacrifice, you will learn very quickly that our world, historically speaking, has not been the civilized world that we live in today. For the most part, and this is still to some degree true, for the most part, society has been civilized. People in general today don't go around for no purpose at all, just smashing into other people. For the most part, society has become civilized. The beginning of history is people who are learning to behave in a godly way. And I want to be very clear about this. To be godly means to protect other people's property from yourself. You know, when we think about the world, it's a very small place, and we all occupy it together. For example, in the dorms, you may not realize what a small space you are living in. And it is quite possible to be in the dorms and to be, and I'll say this nicely, bumping into each other. Bumping into each other might mean that you're acting in a way that you may not realize it, But in a certain way, I'm going to use a strong word, and I don't mean it this way. In a certain way, it's barbaric. It's certainly true in yeshivas. I'm sure it's true here in seminaries as well. For example, if your property damages another person's property in the dorms, you are responsible for that. If you leave something out in the middle of the floor and somebody trips on that, you're responsible for that. The sensitive, godly person, Baba Kama, their first move, I'm not even talking about Bein Adam LaMakom here, I'm just talking about in society, in the dorms, in your life, the first thing that every one of us needs to understand is a human being is a damager. That's what we are. We have the capacity to hurt people. What's the doctor's creed? Do no harm. Why is do no harm so important? Because by definition, if somebody gives themselves over to your care, as a doctor, what do you have the capacity to do? To harm them. So what does the doctor's creed have to be? If somebody comes to you in a state of vulnerability and they say to you, take care of me, you have the capacity because they've given themselves over to you to do what? You have the capacity to hurt them. Every single person in this room, to some degree, is a doctor. The Torah teaches us that you have the capacity to damage somebody else because the world is a vulnerable place. And becoming a person who's sensitive to the barbaric nature of society and says we need laws in order to civilize society. That's what a law is. At its most rudimentary level, even though you'll see that there's two higher levels, at the most rudimentary basic level, that's what law is. Law is to civilize animals. That's what it is. It's not a polite thing to say. It's not a nice thing to say. But that's what it is. What would a society look like without laws? By the way, you see this happening in the world today. Because there are certain places, and I don't want to make this into a big conversation, and please don't make this into a Tomer Devorah moment. There are certain, almost, yeah? There are certain places now that they're pulling back the laws in the name of quote-unquote morality, which is obviously sick. And we see what's happening. For example, in Los Angeles, in California, there's a law that you cannot be prosecuted for stealing under $1,000. So what are people doing? Because, again, in a non-civilized, barbaric society, people will walk into a store, they'll walk into a CVS, and you know what they do? They clear out the shelves and they take $999 worth of stuff, and there's nothing you can do. They walk right out. Because the laws are not in place to civilize society. I saw in the news one store, very brilliant, marked everything in the store over $1,000. Everything in the store is marked over $1,000. When you get to the register, they discount the price. It's like one of those like special deals, like, you know, blue light special, whatever it is. So they knock it down to its regular price. But why do they have to do that? Because if you walk out of that CVS with a deodorant, you're stealing over $1,000, and therefore you could be prosecuted. When we don't have laws in place to civilize society, what happens? People can, because we're not yet in the godly world that we need to be, people can resort to their baseline barbaric self. A Jew has to understand that every one of us has a Nefesh HaBahamis. The world has the capacity to be an animalistic, selfish place, and without laws, that's what happens. You look around and you see murder, and you see wanton looting, and things that happen all in the names of a cause, right? People can be barbaric. Look no further than what happened on Simchas Torah. When we don't have laws, people tend to fall to the lowest common denominator. So historically speaking, the purpose of a law is to civilize society. That is step one. Step two, in Baba Metzia. Now we're getting to, again, not the Bein Adam LaMakom, but the history of Bein Adam L'Chaveiro, in history. In step two, we move from criminal to non-malicious conflict. After society has basically recognized that a criminal society will not work. And by the way, that's what does happen eventually. Eventually, people realize, and this is the democracy that we're living in today, that we need laws to protect each other from each other, because it doesn't really work to live in a society of criminals. Does that make sense? Nobody wants to live. For example, if you speed, let's just take this for example. If you speed, and you might say, but I'm safe. But what happens to the next person who speeds? If we lived in a society of everybody who drives is speeding, what would you say is going to happen? People are going to die. Speeding is exceptionally dangerous. If you run a red light, if you know they say when you're in driver's ed, they teach you a yellow light means slow down, but we all know what does a yellow light mean?
Yeah.
Hurry up. Nobody wants to miss the red, right? But if chas v'shalom, somebody you loved was crossing the street and somebody sees a yellow light and they say to themselves, speed up, chas v'shalom, the results could be disastrous. In other words, eventually we all come to the understanding that in a civilized society, everyone needs to follow the law, otherwise we're going to hurt each other. After that, the next step is as follows. We're human beings. Even if we're not acting violently, even if we're not acting negligently or criminally, you know what we're going to have? Normal, everyday, run-of-the-mill machlokas. Whose turn is it to do the dishes? Who left the towel on the bathroom floor? Who didn't put their whatever away? Right? Natural human conflict. Nobody's malicious, but eventually if two people live together, what happens? Eventually when two people live together, it starts to deteriorate. Eventually when two people live together, like in every single marriage, there's conflict. What does Baba Metzia teach us? Baba Metzia, do me a favor, please. If you don't mind, just close the back door, if you don't mind. Yeah? Baba Metzia teaches us that normal human everyday conflict, is to be expected. And our responsibility is to do what? Our responsibility is to settle conflict. That's not an easy thing to do. You know, there's a line from the Gottman Institute. I don't know if you know this. You know the Gottman Institute? The Gottman Institute runs something called the Love Lab. And they basically deal with marriages and what make marriages fall apart. So there's a concept called rupture and repair. Have you ever heard of this concept? Rupture and repair means as follows. In every relationship, there will be ruptures. In every relationship, there will be fractures. And in every relationship, the success of the relationship has nothing to do with the rupture of the relationship. It has to do with how well the couple stays in repair. Step two of the natural world that we live in is we're moving away from the barbaric. It's true. We're, even though it might appear that today we're not, we are much more civilized than they were 2,000 years ago. But we still need courts to adjudicate regular conflict. Does that make sense? So in step one, what is the purpose of a law? The purpose of a law is to civilize society. In step two, laws don't just civilize society. What do? Laws teach us how to maintain harmony when there's rupture, when there's fracture, when things are falling apart. And finally, in Baba Basra, remember the case of Baba Basra. We have a courtyard. We share that courtyard. We want to build a wall. How do we build that wall? In a way that we can share that wall, in a way that we each give up a little bit so that we share the wall. This is the ideal state of law that a person is supposed to live with. In the ideal state of law, law is not meant just to civilize society or to adjudicate conflict. Laws are meant to create harmony. Now, I know that that's a very hard concept to swallow, so I want you to listen carefully. Most of the time we think of rules as annoying or obnoxious. Remember when you were in school growing up and a rule was like, why do they have all these stupid rules? Yeah, you remember that? Especially if those laws that they had in the schools touched specific triggers that you may have had. I'm not saying anything specific. I'm saying something very specific, if you know what I mean. Yeah? Yeah? You know what I mean? Yeah? You'll figure it out if you don't know what I mean. Just think about the thing inside of you that you hated when you were growing up. That's the thing I mean. Yeah? So, that rule, as you were young, was annoying. Because you're like, it's trying to civilize me and I don't want to be civilized. You get a little older and you go, okay, I understand the rules are there to prevent conflict. You get a little older and you realize rules create healthy boundaries. Boundaries are designed to keep people in, not push people out. Today, boundaries is used as a cudgel in relationships. I'm making healthy boundaries. Get out. No. That's not healthy boundaries. That's using the word boundaries in an unhealthy way. Boundaries are, these are the rules of what it looks like to be in a relationship with me. And because I care about you, I'm letting you know what the rules are so that we can each follow the rules together. Good rules, good laws, not bad laws. Good laws create harmony. Good laws create harmony. When you are decided, you have a shared courtyard. This is life. You all have a shared courtyard in your life, right? And sometimes you're going to want to build a wall in that courtyard so that you can have some private space and the other person can have some private space. In a good law, each one of you contributes to that wall so that the wall will be what? A shared wall. Not a wall that divides you, a wall that unites you. And here I'll tell you very quickly the story of my favorite wall in the entire world, and no, it's not the Kotel. Not that I don't like the Kotel. This is not a commentary on the Kotel, but there's a very special wall, and that wall is in Los Angeles. And it's in EULA for boys. EULA for boys, on the walls of the building, they have Gedolim pictures. And on the Gedolim pictures in EULA, they have right next to each other, Rav Shach, Zecher Tzadik Levracha, the Rosh Hashiva of Panovich, and the Lubavitcher Rebbe, Zecher Tzadik Levracha. And the Lubavitcher Rebbe and Rav Shach had differing opinions on how to see the world. And those who were the Talmidim of Rav Shach and those who were the Hasidim of the Lubavitcher Rebbe did not always see eye to eye on things. And in EULA, they put those two pictures right next to each other. And I was visiting EULA many years ago, as I try to do every year, and I'm walking with Rabbi Schreiber, who's the principal of EULA, and I said to him, how ironic to put a picture of the Lubavitcher Rebbe and Rav Shach right next to each other. And Rabbi Schreiber looked at me, and if you know him in only the way he can, Rabbi Schreiber looks at me and he goes, it's exactly where they should be placed. Everywhere else in the world, the walls divide us, and in EULA, we want our walls to unite us. And I love that line, because that's what walls are meant to do. Great boundaries create connections, not disconnections. If we have boundaries that we are creating in society, it's so that we can be connected to every single other person. If we have boundaries that we create within Yiddishkeit, it's so that we can be connected to every single person. So as we see in history, the development of three things. Laws are meant to civilize. Laws move not just to civilize us, but to adjudicate conflict, because that's natural. And finally, our laws create unity. And now, let us examine one last fell swoop, the Bein Adam LaMakom. How do these three babas, these three masechtas, teach us how to relate to HaKadosh Baruch Hu? The first step of our relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu has to be to contend with the negative forces, the damagers of our life. We have four primary damagers in our life. We spoke about it earlier. Shor, Bor, Mava, and Esh. Shor is an ox. It represents the animal lusts and desires that we have in this world. Bor represents the passive type of person that we are. You know what a bor is? A bor is just a pit. You ever have like a feeling of laziness or lethargy, of just feeling like a total, I don't mean this in a chemical way, but just totally depressed. I don't want to do anything in my life. That's a negative force. That's a damager. Sometimes we don't think about it like that. Being lazy, while it's understandable and it's a protective part of ourselves, being lazy is damaging. Nobody here wants to marry a lazy guy. You don't want to marry a guy that can't wake up in the morning. Imagine a husband who's not capable of waking up in the morning. How's he going to be capable of being a man, of taking care of business, right? You don't want to marry somebody who is animalistic. You don't want to marry somebody who's got that, like, you know, bull in a china shop type of mentality. You also don't want to marry somebody who's just like a bar. He's just there. He just sits there in the middle, just damaging, doing nothing. Mave. Mave means we all have these, we'll call it sophisticated parts of ourself. This is our capacity to damage another. Our ego, so to speak, right? It's very sophisticated, but it's used in a way to twist reality, right? So if number one, you don't want to marry an animalistic person. Number two, you don't want to marry a bore. You don't want to marry just like a depressed guy who doesn't wake up in the morning, a lazy guy who just sits there and drinks a beer and watches the game, right? Number three, nobody here wants to marry an egomaniac. Nobody wants to marry a sophisticated guy who's very opinionated, who can't listen to somebody else, right? He's a man, but he's like, in a certain sense, he takes up all the space, right? There are certain people that they just take up all the space. The part of becoming a human being serving HaKadosh Baruch Hu is learning to contend with our mave, learning to contend with the sophisticated parts of ourselves. And finally, Eish, which is anger and other violent emotions. Anger is almost impossible. Anyone here ever see somebody get really angry and get scared by their anger? Yeah. Anger is a terrifying thing, no? Yeah. You know, you could be a bull in a china shop and not be angry. It doesn't mean you're smashing things out of anger. Anger is a whole different animal. When we speak about Eish, it's so unsafe. If you want to relate to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and you're talking about these four things. These are four ways, four things that you must start off. Baba Kama. These are the beginnings of your relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. You cannot be an animalistic person just doing whatever you want. You cannot be a lazy guy or a lazy girl just sitting there doing nothing with your life. You have to check in on your sophisticated ego that you use to justify your actions and to take up all the space. And finally, your anger is nobody else's problem. You're not allowed to pour out your anger on everybody else. We move from there, and this gets a little bit more complicated now. We move from there to Bein Adam LaMakom of Baba Metzia, where we encountered the Arba Shomrim. The Arba Shomrim. First of all, before we deal with the Arba Shomrim, let's just deal with the lost objects. The Gemara in Chagiga tells us, what is a fool? Ezehu Shota Zaham Abed Kol Masha Nosnimlo. Who is a fool? Somebody who destroys everything that is given to him. In Chassidus, listen to how they translate those words. Zaham Abed Kol Ma. The one who destroys his Ma that was given to him. What is Ma? Ma is like Moshe Rabbeinu said, V'nachnu Ma. What are we? Avram Avinu said, Anochi Ofer Ve'efer, that was very humble. He said he's but dust and ashes. Moshe Rabbeinu was even a little bit more humble than that. He said, V'nachnu Ma, what are we? All we are is an expression of Hashem in this world. You know who a fool is? Somebody who loses his capacity for humility. He loses his capacity for self-abnegation. When we speak about lost objects in the Gemara, you know what we're speaking about? We're speaking about someone who lost themselves. They lost their connection to Hashem. If you want to build after you've been civilized and you're no longer the animal that we spoke about in Baba Kama, you know the first thing you need to do? Return a lost object. And by the way, if you think about it even, what does it mean to return a lost object? If you find something, what do they say in the world? Finders, keepers, losers, weepers, right? What is that in a certain sense? It's a very arrogant thing. That thing that you had is now mine. What do we say in the Torah? That thing that you had, Hashem wanted you to have it. And if I find it and I can return it to you because there's a simon, what does humility dictate? Humility says, I better give it back to you. Lost objects is such an important feature of our relationship with Hashem. That's why, by the way, you know, the minig in Klal Yisrael, not everybody does this, but many, many, many do this. The minig in Klal Yisrael, when your sons start to learn Gemara, you know which parak they're going to learn first? Elu Metzias. You know what Elu Metzias is about? Returning lost objects. You know why we do that? Because the first thing that children should learn is some things are yours and some things are not. If you find something that's not yours, give it back to somebody else's. It's a posture of humility. We move from there to the four guardians, the Arba Shomrim. The Arba Shomrim, they all have levels to them. The highest level, I'm moving through this a little bit quickly. It's difficult. If you don't understand it, it's fine. You can hear it on the recording. But I want to get through it because it's such an important idea. This is an idea based on the Shlach Kadosh. The first type and the highest level of a shomer is called a shomer chinam. He's unpaid. The Gemara in Kedushin says, "Eini nivresi el leshamish eskoni." The highest level of serving Hashem in Baba Metzia, in the second stage, is I was only created to serve my master. A shomer chinam sees life as divine. Girls, I'm going to say to you something. You may not like this. It's not your life. It's not yours. You know how I know it's not yours? Because you didn't build it. You didn't create it. It was gifted to you. But it was gifted to you in order to do something with it. It doesn't belong to you. You were born against your will, as the Mishnah of Avos says, and you will die against your will. Because life does not belong to us. How many times do we say, and I'm sure many of you have said this, I know I've said this, but it's my life. How often do you say that to your parents? It's my life. And what does a parent say? I brought you into this world and I will take you out, right? And it's not your life. This life belongs to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. At the highest level of service to Hashem, we say, Eini nivresi ela l'shamish eskoni. I'm unpaid. I seek no reward, like the Mishnah Navo says, right? Not interested in schar. You know, imagine, like, if you actually said out loud the things that we say in Judaism, it would be so uncomfortable. For example, people say, what's the reward if I do a mitzvah? Could you imagine that people say that out loud? It sounds horrible, right? Like if your husband asks you to do something, you go, what do I get? What do you mean, what do you get? You get to be in the relationship. How awesome is that? To be, if your husband says to you, you want me to take out the garbage? What do I get? What's wrong with you, man? Just take out the garbage. This is not that big a deal. Unless you live in Ramat Beit Shemesh, and then you have to take it out like two blocks. But like in a regular scenario, taking out the garbage is not that big a deal. If you have to ask somebody what the reward is, means there's something not so great in the relationship. A Shomer Chinam is somebody who understands, it's not my property, I'm just holding on to it, and I'm doing it for free. I'm not doing it for any reason. The next thing is a borrower. Why do we borrow? We borrow for our own benefit. These are people who go, the purpose of life is self-fulfillment. Do you hear how egotistical that can be? The purpose of life is for me to become the best version of myself. And again, he doesn't owe anyone anything. I'm just borrowing it. I don't owe you anything. I don't owe you anything for borrowing. I'm not paying for this. I don't owe you anything for life's benefit. After that, we have the renter, the sacher. The renter is somebody, in a certain sense, he's like the borrower, he's like the shoel. But he says the purpose of life is self-fulfillment, but also to serve Hashem. You know how I can explain this? The best way of explaining this is the people who turn Judaism into a self-help book. You know what I'm talking about? Like every shiur that they give is about like improvement of the self. And then like Agav, they mention like, and that's how you serve Hashem. Right? Like it's like a throw-in. Right? At the highest level, you're serving Hashem. Why? Because He created me. It's His life. I do it for no reward. I do it because He gave me this life. A borrower is the exact opposite. It's my life. I become. I borrow. I'm the one reaping all the benefit. A renter is like a little bit of both. He rents it, so he gets the life. He's using it for himself, but because he rented it, he paid for it a little bit. So fine, I'll also give something to Hashem. And finally, we have the Shomer Sacher, the one who gets paid to be a guardian. And he says as follows, the purpose of life is to fulfill Hashem's will. But it's also my life. It's also my life. And I'm using it in the employ of Hashem. But I want to be paid. I want my reward. You understand the difference? So of these levels, which one is the highest? Obviously the Shomer Chinam is going to be the highest. Because he serves Hashem for no other reason. Then there's the people that borrow, that's egotistical. The people that rent, a little less egotistical. And the people that actually pay to be a shomer, that's even a little less egotistical. Let me just finish up. You can ask me afterwards. And let's finally get to Baba Basra. Baba Basra, and we'll finish with this. Baba Basra sees life as a joint creation between man and Hashem. And this is when HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, come, let us make man. The Baal Shem Tov says he's not speaking to Malachim. Who's he speaking to? To man himself. Let's create this world together. Hashem in Baba Metzia gave us a life and we use it for him. But what does Hashem desire ultimately? Hashem desires that we participate in it. And remember in the Mishnah it spoke about two types of stones. Uncut stones and bricks. Uncut stones you give this amount, bricks you give this amount. There's two types of things in this world. There's the uncut stones. Those are like things from Hashem, just like a giant uncut stone. What are things from Hashem? A Sefer Torah, Shabbos, Tefillin, Yamim Tovim. Those are things from Hashem. We join with Hashem in His special days and with His special objects. But there's also bricks. Bricks are the things in life that are of this world that we shape. HaKadosh Baruch Hu puts us into this world and He says, make my world into a godly place, and only you can do that. And that has to be a partnership between man and Hashem. We make boundaries in this world and we say, this is godly, this is non-godly, and this in the middle can be elevated to godliness. And that is ultimately the Tachlis HaBriya. Not only to follow Hashem's laws, but to be a partner with HaKadosh Baruch Hu in creation. So in summary, if you follow this entire amazing piece, it goes as follows. Baba Kama, Baba Metzia, Baba Basra. In Baba Kama, we're animals that need to be civilized. That's in human history, and it's even within ourselves. We have to tame the animal within ourselves in order to serve Hashem. In Baba Metzia, we're not animals, but we're in conflict, and we need laws to mediate those conflicts. We see that in history. We also see that in our relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We have the Arba Shomrim. We have to serve Hashem. Our life cannot be a conflict with God's. We have to give our life over to Hashem. And in stage three, we're living in the ideal of human history. And in the ideal of human history, not only are we not in conflict with Hashem, but we're actually partners with HaKadosh Baruch Hu in His creation.